Look, if you're thinking about starting a cash practice, or you just started one and you're making less than $5,000 a month, you need to take a serious look at the Gym PT Blueprint. I put this course together for you. The PT is trying to do his own thing, that doesn't want to have to work for somebody else seeing 30 people a day and hating their job. And I did this so that you can skip all that time and wasted energy and money that it takes to learn things the hard way and follow a proven system that has helped over 100 cash practice owners start, run, and grow successful practices in the last 9 months alone. Guys, this is something that can significantly help your business. It's just up to you to decide if you're willing to invest in yourself. Head over to drdannymatei.com, go to the products, and check out the Gym PT Blueprint right there. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. I've got good friend Eve Gigi on the line again today. We're talking time management. This is a topic that we've wanted to get into for a while now because, you know, it seems like we get a lot of questions on this. You know, how do you guys get all this stuff done? And I used to wonder the same thing about other colleagues of mine and friends of mine. And once you start getting some better organization in your day, in your week, in your month and your year, it can really make you be way more productive. So before we get into that, we'll just catch up real quick. How's Charleston? Is it hot as hell? Is it nice? How's the shrimp and grits? Everything's good?
Yeah, man, it's good. Like, it's way too hot. Like, August by far is just the only time of year you do not want to be in Charleston. I mean, you just walk outside and it's like walking into a sauna. Like, it's just instantly sweat. It's just so humid and just sticky. You know, but the shrimp and grits are still great. They're still good.
I love it. So good. So I am working with like a little functional med doc here in Atlanta, and I got a food sensitivity panel back yesterday, just to see if there's anything that I was like consuming regularly that I might be like sensitive to, and it's like irritating my gut, and I found out that I don't have any significant sensitivities, but I have four moderate ones: tuna, go figure, apples, cherries, and coffee. And
oh no, coffee—that's your jam.
So I bring this up because I normally drink like 3 cups of coffee a day. I drink a lot of coffee, and I've only had 1 cup today. So if I'm talking slightly slower, and my cognition is not quite as good, that's why, man, I'm tired, because I'm not all hopped up on stimulants, dude. So
that may not be a bad thing. Slowing down sometimes can be a good thing.
Well, maybe my productivity is suffering. My office manager today, it was funny. I told they didn't know that I did this yesterday. I didn't drink any coffee yesterday, and I had a headache, and I was super sluggish. And we had our staff meeting, and I just wasn't really very productive there at all. And today, she comes up. We're standing there just chatting, and I told him that I had stopped drinking coffee yesterday, just for the day, how bad I felt. And she was like, "You look terrible." She goes, "You look hungover." I go, just because I stopped drinking coffee.
Oh man, stuff's got withdrawal symptoms, man. That stuff's legit.
It totally is, but it was my worst nightmare is to see that on the list. I was like, oh man, of everything.
You drink mushroom coffee? What about that?
So I order some. No, apparently I can have that. The doc I'm working with wants me to cut out coffee for 2 months. So.
Ooh.
So I told, yeah, but she was like, you can get these other thing, like the Four Sigmatic stuff, the stuff I brought down to Orlando, and you thought it was, I was crazy for bringing mushroom tea, basically. I can drink that, but that's pretty much it. So, but speaking of being productive, because that's what we're talking about, coffee might help you get there.
But there's also some basic strategies that, you know, I think you and I have done a decent job of implementing in order to maintain productivity in our week with multiple projects going on or managing multiple things, whether it be company with some of these other projects, your licensing with some of the coaching that we do. And you can't do that without some amount of organization within, you know, your week and how you structure things. So why don't you start out and kind of give a little bit of information on like what you found that's been helpful for you to be productive and have good time management?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the biggest thing that I harp on, and I know it's a big challenge for me, is if I have a huge chunk of work to do and I just see a lot of information in front of me, I can just become paralyzed. Like I don't even know what to do with it. Like it just like, where do I even start? Where do I even end? Like, where's the middle? Like it just gets really, really hard. So I really, what I do for myself is I try to organize everything. Let's just organize everything into a list. Let's just use the example of marketing, you know, like the marketing we do for our business. I make a list of all the people that I need to market to, you know, in my lifetime, in the week, in the month, whatever, just organize it into a list. And then I want to I'll prioritize that list into one, two, at the most, three things that I know I can implement that day or that week, because I will take action on one specific thing. I will not take action on 20 specific things if I'm staring at a list. So, I mean, that has been, once I figured that out, like my productivity went through the roof, because, you know, you can be busy and just be paralyzed, but when you're doing actual productive work, that can make all the difference.
Well, it's sort of like last time you were in town when we revamped the PT workshops, our PT workshop secrets course. So yes. Normally something like that is going to take people a significant amount of time. It's not something that's going to get done in 2 days. And so when you look at these big projects, like what you're talking about, right, it is very daunting for somebody that's doing something. Maybe it's not this example in general. Maybe it's starting a practice. Maybe it's revamping a website, you know, something big that you're sort of gives you a little anxiety to think about how much work that's going to involve. And what I found and what you just sort of talked about is when you can break it down into more manageable chunks, there's a couple of things that happen. Number one, the best thing really to start with is to think of like the reverse engineering of like what needs to be accomplished in order to achieve that big goal, right? So these sort of smaller stepping stones to get to that point, you have to figure out which ones have to come first, and then you have to prioritize if you have multiple people on the team, who's going to do what. So we haven't even done any work yet, right? And I think this is where people get a little bit hung up with halfway finished things all the time. Like there's so many people out there that have halfway finished anything, blog posts, you know, videos, courses, businesses they meant to start, ideas that just like went by the wayside because initially they were motivated and they decided they were going to do this thing, but they had a lack of organization in order to complete it. So this idea of reverse engineering small steps and figuring out which steps need to happen first, I think that's actually a really important thing to do because it gives you momentum. And the momentum, it's like starting is not the hard part. Finishing something is the hard part. Like the last 20% of a project is the hard part. And if you have that momentum of these small things that you chip away at, I think that makes a massive difference. And the other thing I would say is, when you're looking at these projects of what you're trying to do, these bigger picture things, you can't do this over your lunch break. You know, you can't say, okay, I'm going to work on, revamping our website over lunch today. But that shit's going to take you hours. And if you think that you can get into a deep work state in 1 minute, you're going to work for 56 minutes and then, you know, 1 minute on the way out, you eat lunch in 2-3 minutes, and then your lunch hour is over and then you see your next patient. It's not how it works. So one piece that I would say is batching chunks of time, if not days, like a specific day to do these big tasks. Now, you do this already, right?
Yeah. I mean, I want to go back and circle back to one thing before I get into that, is that thought of deep work. I just think that's like a really important thing that I think a lot of people don't truly understand. Like, if you have 30 minutes to get something done, it takes me 30 minutes to get out of one task to get started on my new task. Like, I typically need a 4-hour block just to get one, you know, huge chunk of things done. Because like you said, to get into a deep work state takes a minimum of 30 minutes to an hour to even, you know, kind of get there. Right. So I just think it's super important. And that's why, just like you said, I batch time. I pretty early in my practice, even when I wasn't that busy, batched 4-hour blocks, 1 4-hour block for administrative tasks, 1 4-hour block for marketing tasks. And, you know, I'd fluctuated. Sometimes I'd put patients in there, but that was scheduled week in, week out without a fail. Like, I was in there and I would batch my time and I would just do that, those specific things. Cause that's another way people can be paralyzed, is they don't schedule time. It's like, oh, I'll just do it later. Oh, I'll just do it later. And then a week goes by, then a month goes by. And then, just like you said, we've got a half finished ebook or a, you know, marketing referral contacts we've never even called or emailed once and never followed up.
Yeah. And I think you went about doing that early on in a much more intelligent manner than I did. You know, I didn't have any of that initially at all. I mean, it was all sort of it just depended on like what was happening that week, right? Like, maybe I had an opportunity to do this thing, or maybe I listened to a podcast about this thing that I thought was cool. And then for like a day I was obsessed with it. And then the next week I forgot about it, you know? And that happened to me a lot. I mean, I can think of a dozen projects that I started and I never finished, a dozen great ideas I thought in my mind, that we're going to change our practice, or that we're going to, you know, be influential on our digital business, that never ever happened. And this is just some advice that I got from other entrepreneur friends of mine. And they said the same thing. Talk about this flow state, right? Like, this idea of it's not necessarily how much work you do, but it's basically how productive you are during that time. And one thing that I found is, like, little tasks, like maybe responding to emails, these are things that I can do over lunch. Like, I can respond to an email over lunch, something that doesn't really take a lot of decision-making power. Talk about like the trying to avoid decision fatigue. You know, like, that's a real thing. If you constantly have to like work through these complex problems of what the best option is, your brain function sucks. And then you try to go do something creative that's like a higher level task, it's not going to work very well. So email, simple, man. And you can look at that stuff. And this is kind of one of my points, is like the idea of batching that stuff. So, you know, I check email usually. I get to the office before patients. I may have like 30 minutes where I'll just respond to some stuff. I do it over lunch, and then I do it before I leave at the end of the day. So for the most part, I'm not going to respond to people right away on email. And if it's something that I need to figure out how to respond to, that it may take a couple of days, because it may just be honestly like a back burner priority. Versus on Wednesdays, those are my days where I do project-based work, like big picture project-based work, where I can actually spend like 3-4 hours on something and get into that flow state, or that deep work state, where, I mean, dude, the amount of work you can get completed when you've given the amount of time and structure. I think that's the other thing. If you have a big chunk of time with no structure, you'll do nothing with it. You'll find things to do. You'll fold the laundry twice. You'll, you know, whatever. You'll do things that you'd never do as you waste time, versus if you have structure of what you need to accomplish and a deadline at that, then those days, you know, turn into really productive days. So what days are your like project, like work days at this point?
So I take Fridays and I just block basically 1 to 5 for, just like you said, for that deep work, higher level project management stuff. And yeah, I mean, just like you said, like, I can't do anything else. I'm not allowed to fold the laundry. I'm not allowed to do anything. Like, I got to sit at a coffee shop. We, you know, I learned this from you. I put that same song in my headphones.
Yeah.
And I just get into a deep work state and I just, you know, start churning away stuff. And sometimes that deep work state is me just organizing what I'm going to do where over the next month or two, right? So like, I sometimes, you know, if I have a fault, like, I will organize and plan a little bit too much and like not start implementing right away, which I mean, that may or may not be a fault, but you know, cause I do implement regardless, but you know, I feel like some people can be paralyzed sometimes, just kind of make a point of that from that as well. Like I'm going to plan, I'm eventually going to do this and they never actually do it. So, you know, I will plan and that makes me much more productive in the long run where I can pull my most important things out. And I love just getting little tasks done. Like you said, the momentum can just build, right? So every time I complete a task, I get a little more energy and I complete a second task, I get a little more energy. And then by the end of it, in a 4-hour block, I've completed this huge project that I thought it would take maybe, you know, weeks to complete. And I think there's a lot to be said about that. Like when you run a marathon, you know, every mile, you know, you feel a little, you can feel a little bit better. Like it, yeah, maybe mile 14 can be tough, but like your man, I already made it to mile 14. I'm going to run 15. And then before you know it, you're done. So I think there's just a lot to be said about that.
Well, I think the other thing that you said that was impactful is you have to know yourself as well. And there's this concept of matching up two different types of personality types. So like Ashley and I are different. So, and one is not better than the other. One just sounds cooler than the other. So there's a visionary and there's a integrator. So visionary is just somebody that's sort of creative and they're quick to do things and they're more like ideas people, but they will honestly get nothing done typically, finish things. Integrators are people that plan and plan and plan and they have like plans for their plans. They're the checklist kind of people that like to have like these really well-organized checklists. And then, you know, they have like different color post-it notes for things that are important tasks. And they like to bucket things like that. And integrators typically are not quick to start things. And because of that can miss opportunities. And, but if you can match the two up together, then you have balance in many ways in terms of decision making and getting things completed. Otherwise, if you get two visionaries together, it's like a lot of fun initially, and then they just drive each other crazy. And then if you get two integrators together, they really start to drive each other crazy, and they're both, because they're both stressing out over the same thing. And yeah. So this idea of the matching of the two, they call it rocket fuel. It's the name of a book called Rocket Fuel. There was a Gino Wickman book, I believe, who wrote Traction. And he wrote this book called Rocket Fuel, which is the concept of finding that partnership and understanding your role within that partnership, which I think is huge. So you have to know who you are. Are you one or the other? You may be a bit of both, but you're going to lean a little bit more towards one and the other. So if you're fall more in the visionary camp, well, maybe what you need to do is really either work with somebody that's more of an integrator, or you need to understand like, hey, as much as I dislike this, this may be really important for me to take a step back and summarize what I need to get done instead of just like going off on this entrepreneurial seizure and nothing gets accomplished. And if you're an integrator, find somebody that's going to maybe push you to act a little faster than you're maybe willing to, right? So, you know, that will dictate like what your role looks like during the week. But the biggest thing really, I think, is just to define what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And I think this is something that does best when you sort of have like quarterly goals. So we do this with our company. You know, what's our quarterly goal? We have a yearly goal, but that's a big picture thing. Employees that we have, and like, usually when we're talking like yearly goals, it's easy to forget about that stuff. But, you know, a 90-day sprint, we call them, like we know what those are, how many patients we want to see, how many events we want to do. We bucket those into those quarters. So if you have a practice from a time management standpoint, that's probably going to be your best time period to then start to reverse engineer how you're going to structure the rest of what you're doing. How do you guys do it with Made to Move?
Yeah, we have one, same thing. We have like a yearly goal, right? So like our goal is to double our revenue basically each year. And then we got some smaller goals behind that. But same thing, we have, that's our long-term goal. We have more short-term goals. Like, okay, we want to get our new physical therapist up to, you know, averaging 25 visits every single week. And we have our weekly meeting and we go back and see how we've done the previous week and how we did this week as far as that goal is concerned. Because, I think it's really important to say like your willpower only kind of goes so far, right? Like there's a cookie in front of me only for so long. I'm not going to eat that cookie. You've got to do a ton of things to
make cookies, by the way.
So good. You got to make sure that your energy level, you put yourself in an environment of success. And the only way to do that is to do and implement these things that we're talking about, right? And goal setting is a big one, right? So if every week I'm looking at this goal and I'm not hitting it, and every week I have to look at that goal, that gives me more energy every week as opposed to if I didn't look at that goal, right? So, you know, again, we do the same thing. We do, it's not quarterly. We basically just have those short-term goals. We look at them week in, week out, see if we're hitting them. They're usually, you know, how many packages have we sold? We're keeping that percentage really high. We want a certain number of evals, new evals every single week. And then we want our patient visits. And those are the three things we track right now. Those things could change based off of how our business is doing and where we need to put our time and energy. But those are the things we're focusing on right now.
Well, I'm totally distracted because you said cookie, and in my lack of caffeine state, it's hard for me to concentrate on multiple things. So now that's all I'm thinking about. But this brings me to my point, which I 100% agree with. What you track or what you measure gets, you know, tracked and completed. So if you say, yeah, you know, I want to have a busy practice. What does that mean? Like, define it, right? Because we don't know what that means for you, and you don't know what is a success or not a success if you don't have just an objective measure of what that means, and have key performance indicators that show if you're going the right direction or not. Because, you know, too many businesses really just focus on, did I have more money in the bank this time last month than I did this month, right? Or the other way around, I should say, like, I have more this month than I did last month. Cool. I have like a successful business, right? But that doesn't really help if you don't understand what you're looking at, because you may have seasonal fluctuations. You could have short-term and long-term things that affect your business. And for you to make decisions on where that cash flow needs to go or not go based on that is based, it really comes down to the key performance indicators that you track. And if you don't do those things, you're going to be in a world of trouble because you're just guessing. It's like driving a car with your eyes closed. You know, you don't really know where you're going. You know, you're moving, but you don't know if you're going to hit somebody or if you're going the right direction or you're going complete wrong direction. You know, so for you guys, when you look at planning of that, right, and organizing your efforts, what are the key performance indicators that you guys look at?
So we, the biggest one right now, like I told before, is how many new evals we're getting. I would still say, though, good point. The number one that we look at right now that really determines the health of our business is where our average revenue per hour is. So how much money we're making per hour. That has been a big one that I've tracked that I feel like has changed my business completely. There's a bunch of little things too. So, I mean, that's just one, because we want that rate. Once you know that rate, you can reverse engineer so much. You can know when you need to hire somebody. You can know how much rent you can have. Yeah. You know everything else from that, because that's just the most important thing. The biggest way we generate money is by seeing patients. And if we know that we're making more money per hour, then we can use it to reinvest in the business. We know, again, how much money we can spend. That's probably our biggest KPI that we track right now. What about you?
We track quite a few. So like new patient visits, total visits, percentage of packages sold at first visit or second visit. We actually track first two, number of new patients that we see, not number of new patients, but number of recurring patients that we see.
Right.
Contact requests and percentage of contact requests that we get on the website versus percentage of those people that contacted us that actually booked. So that's a big one for us, actually, because that's a marker of how efficient our administrative staff has been on people that have expressed interest in working with us. So we look at a lot of them, and the average visit, revenue is also big, and we'll see that fluctuate sometimes. Like I was looking at it last month, and it was about $6 less per visit than it is normally. And we started looking at it, and it's like, that's weird. So I kind of just delved into it a little bit, and I realized that it was because of just some strategic comped sessions that we have. Those count towards that because that is our time still. It's just we make a $0 amount there. And but from some coaches with gyms that we're developing relationships with or have really good relationships with that just had some little things that popped up. So we had probably twice as many of these sort of like $0 visits that still count as overall visits. But it's not a bad thing because it's a it's an ongoing relationship that's been really beneficial to our practice. So this is sort of where you have to understand not just like your numbers, but what are your numbers telling you and what are the why are those fluctuations there, right? Versus, you know, me wondering why we're making, you know, $6 less per visit than we were the month before. There's an actual like valid reason, you know, for that. And I think in many cases it takes you a long time to figure out maybe what it is that's important for you to track or how much you should be charging. And this is when you're first starting out, it's a guess. Like you don't know. Most right. people guess way too low and they have to try to dig themselves out of that hole. But you're just guessing, you know, you don't know. But how do you project revenue, percent of revenue is going to go towards rent, towards what you're going to pay yourself, towards marketing budget? You can do all those things if you have a really well-defined visit rate, which you're talking about. So I think it's huge. But you guys have even seen that fluctuate with, you know, changes in your price point.
Yeah, no, definitely. And we do the same thing, right? With the new PT on board, we've done way more comp visits and even professional discount a visit, which affects that number greatly.
Yeah.
I just think it's so interesting. Like you just named off like seven KPIs, like without even skipping a beat, right? And like we, I don't, I'm sure you know this too, like the people that we work with, like sometimes they're not even tracking how many visits that they see a week. Like, you know, let's just, you know, you don't have to go into these deep things first and foremost. Like you can just literally just track, all right, like, how many new patients am I seeing every month and how many visits do I have every week? And what are those trends like? You know what I mean? And then you can get into these deeper kind of layers because it's make it as complex as you want to. You've got to definitely start somewhere, you know?
Well, it didn't start that way either. Right. And this is sort of, I think the importance of a visionary and an integrator, right? Like I'm not an integrator. Ashley is an integrator. Now we sat down and had a conversation about our business and where we wanted to go and what we wanted to look at. And she had, you know, her idea of what we should track. I had my idea of what we should track. We did that. And then we adjusted it based on what we felt was like relevant and more important to look at. There's certain things I just don't care about at all. And there's certain things that are very important for us to track. But initially, I mean, I probably couldn't have told you how many visits I had the first 6 to 12 months that I was in business. All I knew was I needed more people and I was really like more focused on local marketing than anything else. And until I got to a point where I was sort of like time saturated, and that usually happens around that 100 visit per month mark. So once you're between like 100 to 120, all of a sudden you're very time poor. And you know, this, I guess we've sort of gone off on a tangent, but it sort of brings us back around to this idea of time management. Once you get to that point, then one of the other bullet points that I wrote down was the idea of building a team. So you don't necessarily have to partner with somebody that's the opposite of you, but you might want to hire somebody that is complementary to what you have going on. So for instance, I just happen to be married to the person that's opposite to me, and she has a really unique skill set that was helpful for our business. So that worked out really well. But if it was just me and, you know, my spouse is very similar to me, I could have gone and looked to hire somebody that is different than me in terms of they're an integrator and they could help me with the organizational side of things as well. So that idea of building a team and then having people to handle specific tasks that they're good at, you get a ton of your time back with that. And like when people say, oh, I don't have the administrative cost is like, it's an expensive cost. I can't afford administrative staff. That's not true. Like you just have to be able to make that back by getting your time back and then making more revenue. Like that's just the whole goal. Like that person should be an asset, not a liability.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing to talk about is time. Like everyone has the same amount of time. It's my daughter.
Oh, yeah, I see. What's up?
Time is our only non-renewable resource. Like everybody has 24 hours in a day. Like that's why even the idea of time management is just kind of so funny. Like people see this and be like, oh, I can't wait to learn like when to do what and how. And like, it's mainly all mindset and just like putting things like almost like tricking you into using your hours in a more, just like we said, kind of productive way. Cause like, I was just thinking about this, like, imagine if we didn't have children, like, you know, that's one thing that almost like pushed me into learning how to manage my time, because I have now so little of it. It's forced me to kind of learn these things. You know what I mean?
Don't you think that's a real,
yeah.
Well, sometimes I wonder, I'm like, what did I do with all of the time that I did have when I didn't have kids? I squandered it is what I did. I did nothing positive with it. I probably was way better at fantasy football and playing Madden, you know, and, but I think that when you have kids, it puts perspective on just how important it is for you to be efficient with your time. Like, you know, your daughter's there right now. I look at the clock and I realize my kids are going to be back in an hour and 45 minutes. So don't have a whole lot of time to accomplish some of the other things that I need today. But when they get home, I don't want to be that jackass of a parent sitting over here, you know, trying to work on something while they're trying to talk to me about their week at school. You know, like, it's just not what's important. And it makes me prioritize what I use that time for much more, in a much more disciplined way. And I think the other piece of this, and this is something that I still have a very hard time with, that I've had a bunch of conversations with, you know, with one of my mentors that I teach for, with Kelly, about this, and it's the concept of saying no more. And it's interesting, man, when you start to have like somewhat of success, right? Like whatever that be, and maybe it's clinically, you start to become well known for your skill set of getting people better, you start teaching, or you start to have a successful business, people will inherently reach out to you because they're trying to find mentorship and how they can do the same thing. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I had plenty of people that I asked advice from and things of that nature. But when people constantly ask, like, hey, can we jump on a quick call? If anything starts with quick, you should probably say no. So if somebody says, hey, can we jump on a quick call? Let's grab a quick cup of coffee. Let's get a quick lunch. Hey, or they say, can I pick your brain about fill in the blank?
Right.
That's what we call a time vampire. And that's something that is directly, and it's inherently beneficial to that person that's asking for your time with no benefit to you whatsoever. And this was very hard for me to say, no, I still have a hard time with this. And I say yes, still probably way more than I should. But what you have to keep in mind is why you're saying no. And as much as I like whoever that is that's reaching out to me, I like my kids a shitload more and my wife a lot more. And the time that I do have where I'm not working on things, I'd prefer to spend with them than with you. And not you personally, but whoever it is that's reaching out to me. I would totally spend some time with you, Eve. But that's the reality. And if you're on the flip side of that, understand, like, when people say no, they're not trying to be a jackass. They're just busy and they do have other things in their life going on. And you know, maybe you should look at it in terms of you're taking something from them. You're not really bringing any value in return. And if you did, and you had some, you'd probably have a way stronger likelihood of them wanting to spend that time with you and develop a long-term relationship, because this is not a short-term game. If you're interested in having long-term mentorship, you know, you've got to provide some sort of value to somebody that has very little time. Otherwise, it literally is just a detractor from them and they get nothing back. I don't know if that makes sense. Hopefully, you know, it doesn't sound like a jerk by saying that, but.
No, it definitely makes sense. I mean, like, you can look at some of the Tim Ferriss stuff, and he kind of tells or shows people in some of his books of how to find a mentor and how to word some of those emails. And you're totally right. Like, if you just email somebody, it's like, hey, can we jump on a quick call? Like, that's probably not going to get them on the phone with you. It's probably not going to get them into a mentorship deal. You've got to kind of learn to ask the right questions or learn how to provide value for that person, because you're right. Like, it doesn't matter how busy or successful, like, you are, like, what you got going on. Like, everybody is busy, like, doing something, and you've got to find a way to, like, provide value to that person in order to develop a relationship with them. I mean, that's how, you know, I think that's how mentorships were born, right? Is that kind of organic way.
I would say it's, and it's also that maybe not that we don't have the time for certain things. Like we definitely have, we've created some time freedom within our schedule in order for us to then work on other things, that it's not that we're tied to a patient schedule, right? So like, so we have the time to do that, but there's opportunity cost with everything. So if we're, if you take on, you know, these lunch meetings, and I get this a lot locally with like, I don't know, I had this one example, like this guy reached out to us and he basically, you know, just said like he felt like we could be really complimentary to his business, and that, you know, he wanted to meet with me for lunch, and he's a personal trainer. And, you know, I just had a really busy week, man. This was when we're still, this is when I still had a full-time patient schedule, and you know, I didn't get a chance to even respond to this guy for like a couple of days. And then I had, I told Ashley, I was like, you know, let's go ahead and reach out to this guy and let's set up a time for us to preliminary meet, you know, like for like 15 minutes just to see what he's all about. And he was so irritated. Like he was so mad that I didn't just drop everything that I was doing and want to meet with him and grab lunch like that day, that he wrote this crazy email back about how we were making a huge mistake. And like this fucker has anything to do with what I'm going to do in my business. You know, like he is Warren Buffett coming up to me or something. And he was so mad. And honestly, he like ruined any opportunity of us having some sort of relationship with what he's doing at all. And it's just like the wrong way to go about it. And what he probably wasn't understanding was that we weren't trying to slight this person in any way. We're just protective of our time, because we do get a lot of people like that, that, that reach out to us. And he came really with like in at it in the wrong way. And because of that, you know, he got very irritated, and that's probably not the best approach regardless, with people in your space in a local community. But, it's just hard to say no to people on stuff, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a good point. It's like, for everyone who's kind of listening to this, like hold on to every minute, hour, day, like dearly, right? Like I feel like that's really a good mindset shift that all of us can kind of do, is like, even if you are like, you know, you just graduated and you're just, you know, you're probably busy with your patient load, but maybe you don't have kids. Like every hour, every kind of like minute, like really does matter. And like, if you can treat it that way and you can start really implementing some of these things early, you can, you know, not like me, take 12 years before you opened up your own, you know, 10 years before you opened up your cash practice, can do it right out of school. You know what I mean? Like you implement these things early. And like the other thing about that is like, if you just make like a 1% change, this sounds so cliche, 1% change every, you know, every single day, right? That's like a 300%+ change in a year, right? So like just knowing that if you make these changes now and manage your time wisely, like in 5 years, you're going to hopefully be way ahead of me. Like I want nothing more than everyone who listens to this just to be way ahead of us very quickly and just crush it.
Well, there's a great book called The Slight Edge that talks about this. The Slight Edge is all about the idea of small incremental progressions every day. And you can even talk to about, I used to talk to people about this whenever, well, before we even got into business, I would, I've always like read quite a bit, or I listened to a lot of audiobooks, and typically both, less now than I used to, just because I listen to so many podcasts now. But I used to try to listen to 2 audiobooks a month and read 2 books a month. And that could be, it may be 1 book a month if it was like a clinical book of some sort that maybe is a little more dense. But I would try to, you know, even look at something as simple as reading, you know, 10 pages a day. Like if you can just read 10 pages a day, in the course of a month, you know, that's 300 pages. You know, that's probably finishing a book almost right there. If you're just reading 10 pages a day, that means you're reading 12 books a year. Now, if you do that for 5 years, the difference between where you're at having, and let's say you're actually like implementing these things you're learning, you're not just like reading them and not even thinking much about what these books are teaching you. That's 60 books that you've read. Now, let's say that your colleague that you graduated with spends the same time that you do reading going down the rabbit hole on YouTube. So that person's now watched however many videos on Joe Rogan or street fights or whatever the hell they're getting into. I don't know, man. I get the most random shit put in front of me whenever I get on YouTube, and I'm like looking for a video to send a patient. And then I get sidetracked with like some terrible Brazilian street fight, and I just don't know why I watch it, but I just, like, a train wreck. I'm like, God, why do I watch this shit? And then anyway, then I go find it. It's like, my point is, your friend has just watched a bunch of YouTube videos. You've now read 60 books. That 60 books could change your life. That could completely change the trajectory of what you're doing. And it doesn't happen overnight. And most people lack the long-term perspective to really look at books or podcasts or whatever as an opportunity to progress themselves every day. And they just don't have the patience for it. And I think more than anything, that's something that students that I notice now, or that I talk to now, lack more than anything is patience, is actually being patient enough to develop and not trying to, that concept of, like, you know, turning the oven up to 700 and baking the cake twice as fast. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I think they look at other people and they're like, oh man, just see, yeah, that success overnight. Like, I don't think they saw the blood, sweat and tears and, you know, 10 years and you being in the army that were just, it just took a long time. And we've read, you know, probably between us hundreds of books and just done hundreds of hours, thousands of hours of this kind of deep work. And when you kind of said that, I think it's really interesting, like people reading 10 pages a day. I think a really good, something that some people can implement right now is take, you know, like we do like food diaries. I wonder, you can almost take like a time inventory and really look. Because if I really looked what I did with my time, maybe like 5-6 years ago, I'd probably be like, man, I spend way too much time playing video games, or I spend way too much time watching Netflix, or, you know what I mean? Maybe I don't need to train 3 hours a day every day. You know what I mean? Take like a real good time inventory for a week, and then you can really maybe then find out, man, I can actually spend these 2 hours building a business plan for my cash practice, or I can spend this hour writing a blog, or I can spend this hour like building my social media presence, you know, whatever your, you know, your big goal. You've hopefully found that out now. What's my big goal? And then make sure it's something that you're working towards.
Yeah. And I'll leave it with this. We'll finish with a book recommendation. I feel like I recommend books all the time. I don't know if anybody ever reads them. Hopefully, if you're going to read one book that I talk about, this is probably the one, because if you can read this book, then it will cut down on your procrastination with everything else that you do. And it's The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. And it's all about the idea of eliminating procrastination in your life and doing the work that you know you need to do every day. And it was very helpful for me. It was recommended by Kelly, actually, when I asked him the same question. I was like, dude, how do you get so much shit done? You know, and he goes, well, I just prioritize the right things and I say no to everything else. And he was like, you should read this book. And it's tiny. And he gave it to me. We were in San Francisco for training. And he gave me this book. I read it on the flight home. And it's a book that I read definitely once a year. Or I have it on audio book as well. I listen to it once a year. And it's all about the idea of just prioritizing the work that you know you need to do, and understanding that when you're not doing those things, that he calls it resistance, which is basically just this idea of this fabricated idea of procrastination. But when you're sitting there and you know that you need to work on this, whatever blog post you're supposed to write once a week to help progress your business forward with your content marketing. And then all of a sudden you're like, you know what? I've been meaning to do research on what 401k options I should put my money into. And then you go down the rabbit hole looking at something else. It's just less painful, a little bit less painful than the shit you know you're supposed to do. So when you catch yourself trying to do something that's a little bit less painful than you know you're supposed to do, that's resistance. And resistance is trying to stop you from being successful. So the whole point of the book is to try to beat resistance every day, or most days. And if you can go to bed at night knowing that you beat resistance, you had a productive day. So it's an interesting book. You guys should totally read it. If you do that, it will probably change a lot of the maybe negative habits that you might have associated with time management that we talked about. Anything that parting shot you want to leave people with?
No, 100%. We know that every single one of us has wanted to complete a task and be like, oh, I guess I'll go mow the lawn now. I totally should do that. Like, you can trick yourself into doing stuff like that all day and not even realize it. Like, half the battle is just realizing that putting a word on it, this is resistance. I need to do the right thing now. And then that can be a great way to start creating some action.
Totally. So, all right, guys, that's it for today. Eve and I will get back together soon and pump out another podcast for you. If you haven't done so yet, head over to Facebook and join the PT Entrepreneurs Group. There's some cool conversations happening there. Podcasts are very much sort of one-way channel. We're sort of talking at you. This is a forum where we get a chance to actually hear back from you and engage with you, and with about 1,400 other people that are in the group, which is pretty cool. It's pretty engaged place. If you don't like Facebook, I totally understand that. Maybe you want to stay off it. But if you're into it and you like those groups, like, this is one to check out. But other than that, guys, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, real quick before we go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I'm overwhelmed with how many positive reviews we've had on iTunes so far, and we have over 100 reviews currently, and just in the last 9 months of starting this practice. The other area I'm really proud of is our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. If you want to get involved in the conversation and not just listen to me talk to you and our guests about what's working in our businesses currently, head over to Facebook and join the PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. It's really simple. We'd love to have you in the community, and there's so much you can learn from everybody that's in there. I can't wait to see you there. Thanks so much for listening.